Hey, welcome to the Dr. Lisa podcast, and this is Dr. Lisa, ready to talk about the gut microbiome. So in the last podcast, we were talking about what is a leaky gut, and we got into two main pillars that we wanted to talk about. The leaky gut was when the body was, from the gut, from the mucosal lining of the gut, is attacking food, right? Proteins in the food. So we know that's going on. It's called a food trigger. It's called a food sensitivity. So the foods that are attacked the most, we would see high levels of antibodies, IgG and IgA. And if we ran a blood test, we would see this, right? The blood test I use is very specific, and we'll get into it in a different podcast. So we have food sensitivities. We have inflammation. We have this attack from the immune system on certain foods in the gut. We also, on the other end of the gut, have what's called the microbiome. And this is over 40 trillion gut bacteria in the gut. And these are good bacteria. They are actually really important to the immune system and to the health of your body. So this is here we have this gut-brain connection, this gut-body connection. The microbiome is really called, when they collectively put all these species together, that's what the microbiome is, what it's called. So these gut bacteria, there's hundreds of species. So people might know Lactobacillus acidophilus. Acidophilus seems to be the most common word that people relate to. It's in yogurts. But Acidophilus could be the species. Lactobacillus could be the species, and Acidophilus will just be a family underneath it. So you have Lactobacillus, you could have Acidophilus, you could have Lactobacillus parasi, you could have rhamnosus. So there's a lot of other ones under the Lactobacillus species that you could have. And then you can have the bifidobacteriums. So there's all these different ones. And when you collectively put them all together, you have what's called a microbiome. So that's how I wanted to explain that. A bunch of pebbles coming together, you know, little tiny sand particles to make sand, or a bunch of rocks coming together to make, you know, your yard. Kind of that idea. So the microbiome is definitely affected by a few things. And this is your takeaway here, as I'm going to explain to you how you can make it better. But the microbiome is definitely affected by stress. That could change this, you know, harmony amongst these species. It can make some of them really high, some of them low. It could be specifically a certain family that you need more of one and less of another. So stress is one thing. And obviously the leaky gut can do it, right? The inflammation and the attack going on in there. Diversity is another thing. The more diverse you are in the different things you eat, you're exposing yourself to different, right, species and families of bacteria. Nomads actually probably have the most diverse flora, because in back in the time where nomads would move around, you would be exposed to different bacteria. The way I could best describe this is if you've ever traveled to like the islands or a different country and you kind of get a bellyache, you know, the water's different, the food's different, and your gut's getting used to the difference of it. Not getting like a food poisoning or anything like that. Just, you know, you're like, you might get constipated, you might have a little off stomach. And again, it's because of your gut flora is so used to like where you're from. If I'm in the United States, I'm kind of used to that area of I live, the house I live in, and the typical foods that I eat all the time, and the flora that I'm exposed to over and over and over again. And then I leave and I go to a different country or different area of my country, or to the islands around my country, and now I'm exposed to different gut bacteria, different flora. So you can see how the diversity affects your gut flora. So one way you can is, yeah, of course you say, yeah, Dr. Lisa's giving me the okay to travel. Yeah, that could help. But also just eating different foods, just keep it simple. If you eat like me, I tend to eat the same foods over and over again, and I have to remind myself when I'm shopping is, hey, you know, I've been eating a ton of blueberries. I better throw some raspberries in there. Maybe I should try something different, right? Maybe I should buy a pomegranate. Maybe I should switch over to some pineapple for a while. Now, here's the trick with foods. We're going to talk a lot about foods today, but what you need to understand is that if you have a food sensitivity to a food, that food needs to be removed. So if your body's attacking, let's say blueberries, I'm going to mention blueberries here, But if your body's attacking blueberries, then that would be a food sensitivity. That would be a food trigger that needs to be removed. That's a different conversation we'll have. Maybe we'll do the next podcast on that one. But back to eating different foods, like don't eat the same foods all the time. Eat a variety of different foods. Change it up, because that's exposing yourself to different species. It's just different, different exposures, right? It's going to help the diversity. So that's the first thing you could do. The other thing is that the microbiome really does well on a plant-based diet. And there's some studies here that I have listed, but you definitely, if you go to PubMed.gov and you put in gut microbiome, a lot comes up. And they have a lot. There's one that's called the diet and environments of the gut microbiome. They also have a study that is comparing vegans and omnivores, which I'm going to get into in a minute, and how the diet is dependent on the gut microbiome. So there's a lot there that if you ever wanted to go deep here, this is well known too. This is well documented. A plant-based diet, a lot of the fibers that are in plants, these good bacteria, they feed off them. They thrive off them. They break them down. And this is kind of how they reproduce and they grow. So plant-based diet is actually known and shown in studies to have a different flora than, let's say, a meat-based diet. So the people eating more meat have a different flora than people who eat more vegetables. I'm not saying you have to be vegetarian or vegan. That's the study. They did a vegan versus an omnivore diet. But, you know, somebody who's just, I say plant-based, they eat more plants, they sprinkle in the meat versus somebody who eats more plants and puts the meat, barely has vegetables, or they put the vegetables on the side. So legumes, beans, vegetables, fruits, just more of that in your diet really helps the microbiome. The thing that harms the microbiome is sugar. It's actually one of the things, the American diet, the processed foods, the fast foods, the fake foods, and I really mean fake foods, because when you go through those aisles in the food store, I don't even know what some of that stuff is. Some of the stuff that we feed ourselves and feed our kids is not food. I use that word very loosely. I get a little aggravated actually, because food to me grows. Like in the ground, you know, from a seed, from a plant, like, you know, God put food on the earth. It's not something made in a lab or put in a box. So I'm very like particular about food. When I talk about food, I'm talking wholesome food, real food. So these fake foods, these man-made foods, these disgusting things that are, you know, toxic, you turn the box over, it's a bunch of chemicals. We're feeding our kids these. We're feeding ourselves these. These are very bad for the gut microbiome. Bad bacteria, bad things grow off this bad stuff, period, especially sugar. So the plants are definitely where you want to be with the diet. The next thing is fermented foods. So fermented foods, I'm not queen of this one, I have to say, and I'm always honest with you guys, and I love to learn. I have friends that rock the fermented world, and just, man, kudos to them. I honestly have to just like shout them out. They're the ones that have like jars on their counters and they have things growing in there. And you're like, what is going on? So you can ferment, you can make your own yogurt, you can make your own sauerkraut, kefir, you know, you could do your own fermentation. Sometimes they do kombucha, which is a drink. And what they're doing is the food is actually fermenting in the jar and it's creating probiotics. It actually creates organic acids, which is super great for digestion. And fermented foods are super healthy. If you don't want to do it yourself, health food stores sell it. But this is how you would get probiotics in natural form. Grandmothers probably did it. Our ancestors did it, you know. But this is the live microbiomes. This is the live good bacteria. That's how you put this in your body. So fermented foods are super healthy. The next thing you could do is what's called polyphenols. Polyphenols are substances in foods, again, that these good bacteria break down, they feed off, they love. They're in, believe it or not, yippee, you're going to love this one, dark chocolate. It is in red wine and grapes, but we have to be careful with red wine because of some of the other things in red wine. Another story. Green tea, almonds, it's in blueberries, and I believe broccoli. I think it's in broccoli if I have that one correct. But that's another thing, polyphenols. It's also in some seeds and a lot of spices. So plants, we're getting back to plants, plant-based diet. Now, if you're not going to do the probiotic fermented, which don't worry, a lot of us don't do, although it's super healthy and we probably should do, you're going to want to take a probiotic. A probiotic is now going to be, of course, you know, it's a powder. So we are talking about something synthetically made. And you're going to want to take a probiotic because you're putting the good bacteria in your gut. But here's the thing about a probiotic, and I will have a podcast on this because I test for this and it's got its own, it needs its own time. It needs its own topic. Probiotics, a really good one. You could go to the health food store, buy a refrigerated one, buy a really good one, high quality, great company, you know, a little pricey. And it still might not be the one you want. Now, I was doing this. I was taking a real top of the notch one. And when I ran my stool test, I looked at the results of my stool test. And it said, you know, you need these five things to be in your probiotic. They're missing in your microbiome. Your microbiome needs these five things. I turned over my probiotic and it didn't have four of them. So I wasn't getting what I needed. Right. And I obviously wasn't eating foods that I guess were helping me with that. So all I had to do was change the brand and turn over a few other ones and find one that had all five of those things that I needed. So sometimes the solution is just a simple brand change or just simply switching up your probiotic. And that's what I do when people work with me. That's what they hire me for, pay me for, is for me to do the testing and then me to go for the probiotic search and find them. The probiotic should fit your gut microbiome. It should fit your stool results. So that's really important if you want the right probiotic. And it's really key in when I work with people, getting them better. And if you worked with me, you totally know what I'm saying because I bring this up. And some people, I really won't work with them unless they do the stool test because they're so sick. Like if they have chronic diarrhea or if they're haven't gone to the bathroom in like a week or two, I'm like, look, we have to do a stool test because the stool test will also tell if there's pathogenic stuff, bad stuff in there too, and the good stuff. So I really need to know what my game plan is from those results. Again, another great topic to have. The probiotic, has its own topic. Like it's going to be another like podcast talk is what I'm trying to say. The stool test is specific. It's very thorough. I know I've seen a bunch of them out there. I know I've seen like Facebook ads for things, but the one I do is super thorough. It goes over so many species and so many families. It looks at the commensal microbes, right? This flora we're talking about. And it tells me as the practitioner, what are high, what are low. And it'll tell me which ones need to be in the probiotic. And that's my job again, to find the probiotic. The other half of the test really looks at a huge panel of pathogenic things. So it looks at bacterias. It can look at viruses. It could look at fungus. Definitely one of them that everyone knows is candida. And it also can look at parasites and worms. If that's in the flora, if that's in the gut microbiome, or if there's an overgrowth of something in there, I need to address that with the patient. So that's really important. That could be causing, again, a leaky gut issue. That could be causing these symptoms that they come in and they come to me for. Definitely, obviously, it could be beyond diarrhea and constipation, which are obvious. It could be, you know, a lot of those brain fogs, fatigue. I don't feel well. I have no energy. And just a plethora of things. So there are families called lactobacillus, and that's actually high in the fermented. Fermented probiotics have a high lactobacillus, as you know, with yogurt has the acidophilus one. And then things like raspberries, artichokes, blueberries, apples, almonds are high in the bifido family. So, you know, these are good things to start eating is the vegetables and fruits, but also blueberries, raspberries, artichokes, apples. Usually the green ones are the best for the gut. Almonds, grapes, green tea, broccoli is actually fantastic, as I mentioned before. So these are some of the takeaways that you want to do. The last thing I wanted to tell you is something I found interesting when I was doing some research. I stumbled across it, and so of course I want to share it. They say that most of the world, especially like in America, that we tend to eat the same plants and the same animals over and over again. They're saying most of the food comes from the same 12 and the same 5. But I know if I just look at my life, like I tend to just like chicken. And even fish, I'll stick with the same three or four. And same with the plants. How many plants do you really eat? And that's what I want to leave with you, is to think about how much of your food choices is really the same all plants. Like, do you really eat a diversity of plants? Is it the same 12 over and over again, like they're saying? Is it the same five, or is it even less? Do you eat the same five plants over and over? Or do you eat the same, like me? I don't like meat too much, so it's like chicken, right? I might do some ground beef and some things. And I probably eat the same four fish. So it's not giving me a diversity, right? If I'm eating a very small limit I'm not a big meat and fish thing. I don't worry too much about it. But I know I should eat more plants. So it was a really interesting thing when they were saying, like, well, 75% of the country's food is the same 12 plants and the same five animals. They say rural areas actually do better at this. And especially if you compare the United States to like Africa and South America, and I think if you've ever traveled to South America, I haven't been to Africa, but if you travel to South America or Central America, you'll see that they do eat more off the land. They do better, I think. Even the fish, it's the fish of the day, and the rural areas they say do better than, I guess, they were comparing to the United States, this study that I was reading. I thought that was quite interesting, actually. What do you think about that? And I'd love to hear what you think about the gut microbiome. So really focus on, I'm going to wrap us up, we're getting to the 20 minute. Focus on the diversity and the plant-based diet, fermented foods, and a probiotic. Blessings, Dr. Lisa.